You're listening to Talking Heads. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. This hour on the programme, we're continuing our coverage, brought to you by PDMS, of the build-up to the general election at the end of next month. And we're joined in the studio now by Liberal Vanin Party candidate for Garth, Nigel Dobson. Good afternoon, Nigel, and welcome to Talking Heads.
Hi, let's do.
Now, it's 5 years since we spoke about politics, because you stood in 2006, and I remember interviewing you then.
Indeed. That was at some earthy time in the morning, though. It was 10 to 8 in the morning, I think, which Republican is... the crack of dawn.
It was a bit antisocial, I appreciate that. How did you get on last time? I can't remember.
I came second.
Right.
I got just another 30% of the vote, which was standing against Steve Rowland's always going to be a challenge, because he's a heavyweight amongst our politicians.
Yeah.
But as representing a new party and unknown in politics at that time, I didn't think it was a bad stab.
You've only recently sort of declared, I think, haven't you?
About a month ago.
Yeah. That's quite late, because I was just looking, and we've been saying, you know, at the end of September, as though it's a long time away, 55 days.
Mm.
Doesn't give you much time to actually knock on doors and talk to people, does it?
No, it was 50-50 as to where I was going to stand, to be honest. I've been heavily involved with Liberal Vanin over the last 5 years, but my business has grown somewhat since then, more on my plate, if you like.
Yeah.
But it became apparent that nobody else was going to stand against Steve Rowden. If nothing else, there should be an election, even if he wins it.
Yes.
He should go in with a mandate, and if people don't want him to win it, they should have an alternative to vote. So I didn't want to see, not just Steve, but I'd like to see any politician just walk into the House of Keys. So I felt I should have a... throw my hat into the ring.
And you've not been away from politics, because you've been very heavily involved in the Liberal Vanin Party, I think, haven't you?
I have indeed. I was chairman of the central branch for a couple of years. I'm still on the national executive of the Liberal Vanin Party. Also, shortly after the last election, I joined the London Commissioners. A couple of years ago, I was chair of that for a year, involved in various committees and the like with that.
Do you think that the future of politics in the Isle of Man involves party politics? Because the Libvans have had a bit of a checkered history over the last 5 years.
I think we need some form of party politics. We already have party politics, whether we like it or not. It's the chief minister's party, whoever the chief minister happens to be.
Yeah, council of ministers versus the rest kind of thing.
Absolutely. Just the way the system works, there's a built-in majority in that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever good for democracy where 100% of the people sitting in a parliament building are in government. Who's checking the checkers?
Yes.
That's not to say that we want to spend our lives as a party of opposition. We don't. We'd obviously like to get into power and to govern. But in the event that we're not in a position to govern, then you need to scrutinise. That's not necessarily to criticise. It's not necessarily to be against all the time. But you need to scrutinise. We wouldn't have known about the MEA. We wouldn't have known about the Irish problems. We wouldn't have known about all sorts of things if somebody hadn't scrutinised. And I think that keeps the people in power more honest.
And you see that as the role of the Libvans for the foreseeable future, scrutiny?
I think probably at the moment, hopefully not for the foreseeable future, any political party obviously wants to be in a position to govern. That's the point of a political party.
But in September's election, what are you likely to get? Maybe 3, 4, 5 members at best?
I would like to think we'll in that sort of region.
Yes.
I'm not expecting to get 13 or 14 members and saying, hi, we're the majority party, we're going to... go into office. I don't honestly think that's going to happen. But I do think we're much more established now than we were 5 years ago. We have a better base. We have some quality candidates. It's a much more professional campaign this time round. I would hope we'll get a number in.
But it's slightly unusual for the Isle of Man, isn't it, to stand as part of a party like this, in that, you know, you are constrained by the policies of the Liberal Vanin Party, whereas everybody else is standing as a pure independent, and they're able to come up with their own ideas and expect a mandate from the public based on that.
Yes, but they get the mandate, but then what do they do about their ideas? Unless you're the chief minister, your policies don't come into action, do they? Take my opponent, for instance, Steve Roden. I've no doubt that he's working hard on a manifesto, which will be published 2, 3, 4 weeks prior to the election, as is the norm. If he gets back in and he becomes speaker, put the manifesto into the shredder, because he's now a presiding officer and not a politician.
Yeah. Yes.
How is that better than following a party policy that I have helped
to formulate
and evolve? If I didn't agree with a party policy, I wouldn't be standing for them.
You said earlier that you're a publican. I think you're a lot more than that these days. Give us an idea of your background, Nigel.
I started off, funnily enough, as the son of a publican who went on to greater things. Over the years, I've been a mix of things, really. I was in the Merchant Navy for a number of years in my teens, early 20s, which was very formative, if you like. You know, I saw a lot of the world when it was poverty and this, that and the other. I then spent a while doing what you do, and you know, doing a bit of radio work and DJing and that sort of thing. And then came back into catering, came to the island 13, 14 years ago, took on the Liverpool Arms 10 years ago, the Niable Cafe for Manx National Heritage 5 or 6 years ago, and a couple of years ago we acquired the franchise for the other heritage sites, or most of the other heritage sites, so we've got 6 outlets around the island now.
And you're very much the man behind that, or that's the perception of it. What will happen to that business if you're elected?
Well, each business has its own manager at the present time, and in the event that I'm elected, we would appoint somebody to take up a lot of my job.
Yes.
I'm already trying to get a little bit more hands-off than
I have. But you'd still want to keep a finger on the pulse, I'm
of
sure.
Course, yes.
And is that compatible with being a full-time politician?
I think so, yes. There are a number of our sitting members also operate businesses. Steve Roden operates a pharmacy in Laxey. I don't think it's likely that I'm going to be doing 40, 50 hours a week for Dees later, but certainly I would be keeping, as you say, a finger on the pulse.
OK, you say that you've also put in some public service as a commissioner. Why stand for national politics? I assume that you feel that you're doing a fairly good job as a commissioner.
Well, I hope so. The budgets are well managed. The rates haven't increased at all, actually, apart from the water side of it over the recent years. The island's been good to me. I've done fairly well since I came here. And I feel I'd like to give something back. I also think that over the next 5 years, we're going to have a pretty tough time, and some tough decisions are going to have to be made. We have to look at the economy much more strongly than we have been doing. In surveys that Liberal Van Inn are carrying out, the VAT black hole and the economy are very high on the worry list for people. And I think a little bit of business acumen in the House of Keys wouldn't go adrift.
What do you think is the answer, or are there more than one answers to
There's
the
more
problems?
Than one. It's huge, isn't it? Let's look at some of the figures. In our current account, if you like, in cash, we've got something like £400 million, I think it is, in reserves. Everything else that's there is ring-fence for pensions or whatever. We're overspending at the moment by something like £100 million a year, so we've got 3 or 4 years of reserves left before we're skint.
And we can't borrow. So.
Under the current legislation, we can't go to the gilt market to borrow. If you look at the size of our public service and you compare it with Gibraltar, the Channel Islands, Cayman Islands, you know, similar sorts of jurisdictions, then we spend 130% on the public services to their 100%. Yeah. So we're spending 30% more. 30% of 600 million is 200 million. 200 million is what we're short each year. There's all sorts of areas. But nothing should be sacred apart from education and health. I think education and health, frontline services, you've got to ring fence as best as you possibly can. But other services, you're going to have to look and say, well, look, we can't afford it anymore.
So the result of our fiscal policies so far is unhappiness, you suggest?
I think we've got a very tough time coming. I think we've been in a situation where we've had a tough time for a couple of 3 years. We just haven't made the decisions yet. We had half a dozen chaps made redundant in the railways recently. Very sad. Nobody wants to see people made redundant. The fuss and the outcry. We need to go much deeper than that if we're going to solve these problems.
That's not going to be a popular stance, though, is it, to talk about making people redundant? So do you have the backbone and the spirit to do that, if needs be, to cut costs?
Certainly I do, and I believe our party does, simply because if we don't, then others are going to force restrictions upon us because we're going to run out of cash. If you've got a business and you see you've got a cash flow problem, you've got to do something about it.
Yes.
If you don't do something about it, the business will cease to exist. And as a nation, we are, with a social policy, we need to look at it in a more professional, more business-like manner. You can't keep spending 130 quid if you've only got £100 coming in.
Absolutely. And where do you suggest we do it? Where can we make the savings?
Well, you've got to look at back office first, because you obviously want to protect frontline services as best you can. And it's very difficult when you're outside of the system to actually see where the obvious places are going to be. Because we don't have the Freedom of Information Act that we would like to have, I can't go and say, please, can you give me these figures, those figures, so I can see what I need to see to give you a straightforward answer.
Well, your party chairman can't he?
Yes, he can, and to some extent it does. But even so, until you're actually in department and in government, you haven't got the resource to get the necessary information. But there's no doubt, I don't think there's anybody out there who doesn't believe that our public services, I think it's 11,000 people we've got on the public payroll on the Isle of Man. That's about 13-14% of the entire population, man, woman and child.
Yeah.
We've got a public sector pension liability approaching 2 billion. It can't go on, Peter. Stu, it can't go on.
Yeah. Okie dokie. Well, those are the threats and the things that might need to have to be done. What about selling ourselves better? Because that's another part of this, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Do you see any opportunities that people aren't taking advantage of?
I think there are all sorts of opportunities. But we have to have opportunities that create jobs and that create income. The space sector is an exciting opportunity, as is the e-gaming. They're well run and there's room to expand there. But you do have to watch. I mean, we have the shipping register, for example, an excellent idea, and it does bring in income. But much of the accountancy work for that is now done in Mumbai because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
We have to be aware that we're in a competitive world and we have to remain competitive and keep regulation to a minimum while making sure that it's, you know, up to standard for the whitelist, etc., but allowing entrepreneurs to be entrepreneurial.
And isn't that the problem, that the way that things work at the moment, even though we're an independent jurisdiction in many ways, we still have to abide by international rules and regulations? And
yes, of course we do. Of course we do. But we do have the advantage, as been said by many in the past, that business and the policymakers are much closer together here than they would be in a larger jurisdiction such as the UK or more, well, our European competitors, because you can walk down the high street and bump into the chief minister or whoever, and access to our policymakers is much better. And I think that's an attractive thing to offer people who are coming in to do business.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Today we're talking to Nigel Dobson, who is standing for the constituency of Garth as a member of the Liberal Vannin Party. What about tourism? Because you're kind of tied in with that in terms of your career.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing that most people say, that, you know, we really ought to have a stronger tourism industry. Do you think that's even a possibility these days?
I think it's difficult. I think one of the major barriers to that, as we all know, is the cost of getting to and from the island. Like it or lump it, you want to bring a family of four over in a car in the middle of August on the Bamacray, and you could probably go to Spain for not much more.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very expensive getting on and off the island. And we're in a bit of a tight place there. We've got this user agreement in place until 2028. It's a difficult situation. I think we need to look to see if there are ways of making it more economical for people to get to the island, not just from a tourist point of view, but from a business visitor point of view.
Maybe some sort of a package deal where you can subsidise the travel costs against accommodation or something like that. Is that the
perhaps
answer?
Yeah, it's getting a package together. It's difficult getting people over at the moment. I mean, this year, I think, in actual fact, the number of coaches coming over is up somewhat. But that, in a sense, is very good for the hotels, but it doesn't do anybody else any good, because they tend to be all-inclusive packages these days. And so the pound isn't being spent on the street, if you like.
What are the issues in Garth? Have you had a chance, really, to talk to many people? Have you been out on the doorstep yet?
Yes, I've been out on the doorstep. And I think the issues in Garth are the same as they are elsewhere. People are worried about the economy, there's no question. Last time round, the thing that came up almost every day was immigration. I'm hearing very little about the immigration this year. It is all about the economy, and people are worried. We still have very low unemployment. It was only around about 2% is the published figure, I think. And yet people are talking about unemployment on the doorstep, and they're worried. There's a perception out there that, you know, things are not going to be as rosy.
We've talked about that already, and the fact is, you said earlier on that the next 5 years is going to be pretty tough for the Isle of Man. One of the things that we're going to have to do is to probably cut jobs to save money, so it's not an unrealistic fear, is it?
Absolutely not. And I think we have to look at the economy more honestly. It's all right putting out headline figures, as government often do, saying that our economy is growing at 5 or 6% or whatever it is. But then if you look more closely into it and you see that certain sectors of our economy are growing at 12, 14, 15%, that in turn means other sectors of our economy must be in recession.
Yes.
And the tourist industry, as you say, my industry in particular, I was talking to the owner of one of Douglas's major taxi firms recently, and he reckons that their trade this year in the evenings is big double digits down on previous years. There are areas of the economy that really are struggling now, and it's not going to get easier.
What do you think of the current government? I think it was David Cannon said a few weeks ago it was the worst one in living memory. What do you think of their achievements or lack of them?
I think there's been a lot of fence sitting. They have had some tough decisions to make. But I really do think there's been a lot of nodding going on. When the reciprocal health agreement was up for discussion, I heard the health minister and I heard the chief minister say there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
And guess what? There was.
Well, also, yes and no. I mean, playing devil's advocate, was there anything that we could actually do about it? Or was it just a shift in emphasis from the UK?
I think Andrew McKinley fought a battle with somebody he knew on first name basis, and I think that helped a great deal.
But government can't be accused, surely, of not taking that route because it wasn't available to them.
Yes, but they didn't do anything else either, did they? They didn't come up with a plan B. I mean, Liberal Bannon came up with a plan B, and they fought us all the way to getting that into the House of Keys. And then when we finally got it put into the House of Keys, they supported it unanimously because they hadn't come up with anything else.
Yes.
It's all right saying, well, it's the big boy across the water who slapped our wrist. Well, fine, get up, dust yourself down, and find a plan B.
Is that one of your worries about if you are elected in September that you might end up slightly marginalised in the House of Keys? Because, you know, Peter Caron, your party leader, is the most outspoken critic of government. Mm-hmm. No two ways about it. He asks the most questions, and he gives politicians a fairly hard life. But do you think that might work against you if you get elected?
No, I think we need to have ask those questions. Let's understand something. People say that Peter asks the most questions, and most certainly he does. But 90% of the time, Peter Caron is voting with government. He's not criticising it. They do, in the day-to-day run of things, do what they need to do, and we support them. As to whether you're marginalised, I think if you go in with a mandate, then that mandate has to be respected, and you have to fight your corner. There will be occasions when, with good political debate and with open minds, we will come up with ideas that others will say, well, actually, there might be something in that.
And you think that's likely?
It happened with the health insurance scheme that we were putting in place.
Wasn't that because government had been embarrassed into it, though, by that stage?
Well, if we have to embarrass them into doing the right thing, that's what we'll do.
Going back to more local issues, Laxey's benefited from the Regeneration Fund. Do you think that that idea is working?
I think it is. I think Laxey's done very well. There are other areas of the island that are doing reasonably well out of it also. But in the scheme of things, it's a comparatively small budget, isn't it? I think
eight million overall.
So there wasn't a huge amount there. But I do think Laxey has probably come out on the plus side of that.
What do you think about? I mean, it was Alan Bell, I think, originally when he was Treasury Minister, that said that we need to up our game if we're going to attract international business.
Yeah.
Do you think that we promote the right image of the Isle of Man internationally?
That's a difficult one, isn't it? Yes and no. I don't think we do a bad job on it, but we can always do better.
Strikes me that we probably pay a fair chunk of money to these PR consultants in London to promote the Isle of Man, and yet we're still seen internationally as a dodgy tax haven somewhere off the south coast of England. You know, most people don't even know where we are, do they?
Yeah, it's true. It's an issue of perception, isn't it? Very often perception is very difficult to counter.
Yes.
We have a problem on the island at the moment where, for all the doom and gloom, we're not nearly as badly off as some of our neighbours. But you switch on the radio, you watch the television, and all you hear is doom and gloom from across the water, both ways, doesn't matter which way you go. And you start thinking, well, I didn't realise I was poor, but apparently I am. And people are doing that. They're sitting in on... They're as well off as they were a year ago, but they think they're less well off.
I don't know what the answer is. Like you say, it's all about perception, isn't it? You say Switzerland, people think about cuckoo clocks and dodgy sort of Nazi money. You talk about Jersey, you think about cream and cows and potatoes. Isle of Man, you think about Manx cats, the Laxey wheel and the TT. I don't know quite how we get out of that, but we ought to.
I think that's why, how effective they are, I don't know. But I think that's why we have these consultants in London. That's why we have an office in Brussels these days. Yeah. Whether they're valued for money or not, I can't say because I'm not heavily involved in that side of things. But certainly we're trying and we continue to promote as best we can. We do attract enormous amounts of good international business. I mean, the e-gaming, as I mentioned earlier, has been a tremendous success on the island, brought a lot of jobs, and they're well-paid jobs. The publicity we got from the fifth most likely nation to land on the moon might be a little bit...
And the Mark Cavendish effect.
And the Mark Cavendish effect. I was reading something the other day, and they said, oh, and that cyclist fellow, you know, it's and the Isle of Man is now a cyclist fellow's place.
Yes.
But it's all enough plus points, and eventually,
you need to get those
brings
over.
Brings a total level.
Yeah. Like I said earlier on, a lot of people, most people are standing as completely independent candidates. You're standing as part of the Liberal Vanning Party. What is the manifesto of the Liberal Vanning Party? Just so that people understand what they would be voting for if they voted for you.
Oh, well, the full manifesto is about a 90-page document. But highlights will come out in due course. We're still finalising it, to be honest. But we would like to see freedom of information. We want much more open government. Everybody talked about transparency at the last election. And again, it was a big issue at the last election. It's still not happening.
But can a government be transparent? I mean, it's effectively the board of a company, isn't it? And, the employees can't always expect to know what's going on in the boardroom.
No, you can't have all details of all things. Of course you can't. But as we were talking earlier on about wanting to get access to information so we can formulate our policies and make our plans and our budgets, etc. Without that freedom of information, you can't get that kind of transparency. The Freedom of Information Bill that they played around with a year or two back, you could have information to everything except what you wanted to get hold of.
Yes.
And transparent government encourages good practice, will encourage top business to a well-regulated and well-run jurisdiction. I think it's an essential in modern-day government.
What do you think about MHK's pay? Do you think that they're paid too much or too little?
Nobody's ever going to agree on that, are they? Where I do think there's a problem, and it was up for debate recently, and I do think there's an issue where if you're offered a position by the Chief Minister or another minister, then in accepting that position, you receive several thousands, and it's 10, 12, 14,000 pounds in addition to your salary to take on that position. You're then kind of tied in, aren't you? Because if you disagree and if you stand down, you say, well, hang on, that's 300 quid a week out of my back pocket. That's what decision's going to cost me. And you have to be a saint to say that that doesn't cross people's minds.
Yeah, but similarly,
and I think that disparity isn't good.
If you expect an MHK who's good at constituency matters to put his entire family life on hold so that he can be a Minister of State and maybe the Chief Minister, involving a lot of overseas travel maybe, involving much longer hours, you've got to pay them more, surely.
I'm not suggesting that you don't pay the Chief Minister more than a backbench MHK, but I do think that the differences can be quite severe. I mean, if you take Peter Caron, for instance, with his exes, he's on something like 41,000, 42,000, something of that sort. Chief Minister with his exes is on 70-odd. But ordinary board members are on 60-odd. Yeah. Now, they're not the Chief Minister.
So you think they're paid too much?
I think the gap between is too big, yes.
We've got, we're out of time now, Nigel, but in one or two lines, tell people of Garth why they should vote for Nigel Dobson end of September.
Well, I think it will help to establish the Liberal Valiant Party within the House of Keys and start to bring good, honest scrutiny into our government.
Nice to talk to you again. No doubt we'll talk again before September the 29th, is it?
It is.
Thank you.